neighborhood's grief. Tragedy on a street in Vaughan. A brother and sister struck by a vehicle while playing in a driveway. The young boy, just 4 years old, has died in hospital. The girl is in critical condition. Good evening. Tonight, a memorial is growing outside the home on Athabasca Drive.
Also expanding the list of charges against the accused driver, who's 16. CTV's Sean Lethong is live in Vaughan with more. Sean.
Well, Nathan, Michelle, you can see the visual representation of this neighborhood's grief with that memorial growing over my shoulder. We find out this morning that the little boy had died, and then this evening, the little girl herself is still in critical condition.
It started small. Flowers for a family's heartbreak. Their 4-year-old boy killed in a crash. Their 10-year-old daughter in critical condition. A neighbor injured. A community in tears.
He was just a sweetheart. I'm walking around carrying his little ball that ended up on our front lawn.
Elizabeth Lincoln lives next door. She knew the little boy.
Just for half, and he's a delightful child. They moved in when, in the middle of the pandemic, and he would talk to us through the fence. We have a 5-year-old grandson, and we talked about times that when the pandemic was over, they were going to get to play together.
Among those to bring flowers, officers with York Regional Police who attended the scene yesterday.
I went home, I thought about it, and can't imagine what they're going through too, right? So, I mean, for us, what we can do is come here, show our respects, and also, you know, let them know that we're here for them, right?
With word spreading, those who grieve do so with a strong sense of
anger and sadness, because this didn't need to happen.
It was noon on Sunday on Athabasca Drive in Vaughan. The children were playing in their driveway, a neighbor helping to fix a bike chain, when they were struck by a black Mercedes-Benz that veered off the road. CTV News was sent this video from a neighbor's security camera. It shows the speed of the car right before the crash, and another neighbor shared this. The sound their camera recorded as the car drove by just before losing control.
Just after the car goes out of frame, you can see that mark on the curb. That's where it crashed and mounted the lawn. It goes through this driveway, and then you can see two tire tracks going towards the hedges, over and then onto the driveway.
The car crashing to a stop after hitting a transformer several meters beyond.
Yeah. I could see just a black object go flying by, so I came out in my socks up to the front porch, and I saw my neighbors in the driveway with their kids. The two kids were in bad shape.
The driver of the Mercedes, a 16-year-old boy, was arrested at the scene.
I hope that he's held accountable, and I hope his parents are held accountable too.
He faces charges of dangerous operation caused death, criminal negligence caused death, 2 counts of dangerous operation causing bodily harm, and 2 counts of criminal negligence causing bodily harm. Neighbors say that speed has been a problem on this street for years.
We've seen cars speeding through here all the time.
All the time.
People go pretty quick here, like they pick up speed.
With flowers sitting near where the children played just a day ago, Elizabeth Lincoln can only remember the last time she spoke with her little neighbor.
Told me about how his mommy makes all these different types of pancakes, and chocolate ones and yellow ones, and he went into such detail with it, and I said to him, I said, which one do you like best? And he says, I like them all.
And Elizabeth Lincoln says that she doesn't know what she's going to tell her 5-year-old grandson. And many of the people I spoke with today, and many of the people who tried to help out yesterday, are just grief-stricken, thinking and wishing they could have done more. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Next to a deadly and brazen barrage of gunfire outside a Toronto apartment complex.
Upwards of 100 shots fired in the middle of the afternoon on Sunday, leaving one person dead. CTV's Janice Golding is live on Willow Ridge Road. Janice, we now know more about the victim.
Hi, Michelle. Yes, the victim in this case is a 28-year-old Mississauga man. 3 other men were also shot there in their late 20s or early 30s. And police say it's a miracle more people weren't injured given just how many bullets were fired. It's been more than 24 hours, but the signs of bloodshed still surround an Etobicoke high-rise.
Driver was on here. You can see the blood. All these droplets you're seeing. Yeah, all blood.
Shania was in her 4th-floor apartment when she heard what she originally thought were very loud fireworks.
Like they were throwing it right in my apartment.
The Toronto woman went to investigate.
Oh, and I saw the gunman, masked gunman, and I ran back. I ran back, and my son was right behind me. And I ran back into my unit. I was just screaming. And
the gunfire erupted around 2:20 p.m. Police say around 100 shots in all fired by unknown individuals who drove into an Eglinton and Martin Grove area apartment complex in a black four-door sedan, which detectives believe could be a 2014 to 2018 Audi A6.
Start this window, the next window.
Shots were fired at two cars, one parked just meters away from Nyong's first floor apartment.
I'm really scared. I don't know what to do, as if I should fly away from this place.
Four men in two separate vehicles were wounded in the Willow Ridge Road shooting.
It was a little bit terrifying.
No safe at all.
Frustration, angry, scared for all the children.
28-year-old Odell Leslie of Mississauga would die of his injuries.
Tire tracks right here. It was parked right here.
Shanai says she saw the wounded driver of a Mercedes flee a gunman who was on foot.
He was standing right there. He was not in the car. He was shooting at the driver who had run to the back.
She also saw a passenger inside the vehicle. He was not moving.
It was traumatic. I couldn't sleep last night.
And Shanai says she's haunted by how close the violence came to her own home. Police say one of the surviving victims is in life-threatening condition. The other two are in serious condition. They add that at this point, it does not appear that the shooting was a random attack. However, it's still too early yet to draw any definite conclusions. Reporting live, I'm Janice Golding. Now back to Michelle.
Thank you, Janice. Turning next to the pandemic and the great reopening debate when it comes to outdoor recreation.
The province suggesting changes could be coming, although any timeline for decision still isn't firm. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
And you know, Nathan, the date to reopen those amenities seems to change depending on who you talk to. Last week, Premier Doug Ford suggested they would not reopen until June the 2nd at the earliest. Today, one cabinet minister affirmed that date, while another cabinet minister said publicly those amenities could reopen sometime in May. As the temperature rises in Ontario, so too does the pressure on the province. The Ford government is feeling the heat over the continued closure of outdoor amenities.
No one recommended that you close outdoor activities and recreational facilities.
But the government seems to be at odds with itself. On one hand, some cabinet ministers are firm.
But I can wait until June the 3rd to play golf. And I can wait until June the 3rd to play tennis.
But others at the cabinet table are signaling something different.
It may be very soon. It may be June 2nd or perhaps even before that.
The Ford government shut down golf courses, tennis and basketball courts 1 month ago, claiming the move was designed to keep people at home. Today, the chief medical officer of health acknowledged the province does not have the data to support the decision. And a growing chorus of medical voices says as the reopening approaches, outdoor activities should be prioritized.
What we should be prudent about, obviously, is things like indoor dining, indoor fitness facilities, nail salons, hair salons. That sort of thing is certainly something that could lead to potential transmission. But a lot of things can happen safely from an outdoor standpoint.
Public health officials will not say what the province needs to achieve in order to open those spaces, but says a decision is coming.
We're getting more optimistic about the range of outdoor activities. Our science table has given us advice on the increasing ever more on our outdoor activities.
It's still unclear if that decision will come before or after the May 2-4 long weekend. And today the NDP tried to force a vote on the issue inside the Ontario legislature. They tabled a motion calling on the government to reopen those outdoor recreational amenities as soon as possible. That vote was defeated here at Queen's Park. It was the Progressive Conservative government that voted against it. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. Also tonight, awaiting word on a summertime staple. The premier hinting that kids may be going back to camp with critical conversations already underway.
For a second straight day, the province is seeing fewer than 2,200 new cases of COVID-19. Public Health Ontario is logging 2,170 new illnesses in its most recent update. That brings the province's total to more than 511,000 during the pandemic. Four more deaths are linked to the virus, putting that figure at 8,489. And more than 477,000 cases are considered resolved.
Tonight's regional breakdown looks like this, with 566 new cases in the city of Toronto and 556 in Peel Region. There are 215 new cases in York Region, with 120 in Durham and 101 in Hamilton. Halton Region is logging 91 new cases, with 59 in Niagara. The debate over restrictions comes amid a big development in the vaccination effort.
The province is advancing a week ahead of its initial rollout schedule, now allowing residents 18 and up to book a shot. Looking at the numbers, the Ministry of Health says more than 112,000 doses were administered yesterday, and more than 7.1 million shots have been given out over the course of the rollout. Nearly 33,000 people in Ontario are considered fully vaccinated, having received both required doses. CTV's Natalie Johnson is live now with more on the rollout. Natalie.
Hi, Michelle. Well, 2.2 million doses of vaccine are coming into Ontario this week, and the province says that as of tomorrow, all adults will be eligible to book their shot. But how soon you can get an appointment might depend on where you live. In Toronto, the mayor is warning that at this point, the supply might not meet the demand.
With a massive shipment of vaccines set to arrive in Ontario earlier than expected this week, the province says there are now enough doses to expand eligibility to anyone 18 and up.
It's awesome that everybody's getting it.
I think more people need access.
Waiting this long has been a little bit trying, but I'm glad that we're here now.
The provincial portal will open at 8 a.m. tomorrow for any Ontario adult who couldn't previously book their shot based on their age, postal code, health condition, or job. But Toronto's mayor points out that expanded eligibility doesn't equal more appointments without more doses.
The demand for appointments created by these welcome changes to eligibility can only be met through an increase in vaccine supply in the coming weeks.
A small fraction of appointments are still available at Toronto's city-run mega clinics over the next few weeks, but slots are only currently open for booking until June 13th. So unless the province allocates more doses to Toronto sooner, the bulk of remaining adults who become eligible tomorrow could have to wait until the end of June for a shot.
We look forward to being able to open additional appointment blocks and additional appointment volume the very moment that additional vaccine can be made available.
In addition, Toronto is receiving about 30% less vaccine this week compared to last, since the province is no longer allocating doses by hotspot. But experts say the hotspot approach was successful in targeting areas hard hit by the virus. In Thorncliffe Park, for example, the rate of vaccination among adults has risen to 57% from just 16% at the end of March.
Those inequities have not just been ironed out, but it actually, the scale tilts in the opposite direction, where now we have proportionally more people in hotspot neighborhoods vaccinated than in non-hotspot neighborhoods.
Toronto-wide, more than 60% of eligible adults have now received at least one shot.
Mayor John Tory said he spoke to Premier Doug Ford today about the need to get more vaccines to Toronto now that eligibility is expanding. He called that conversation constructive. Reporting live in Scarborough, I'm Natalie Johnson. Michelle, over to you.
Thanks, Natalie. And a reminder, our online team is tracking every aspect of Ontario's ever-evolving vaccine rollout. You can find that information at ctvnewstoronto.ca/vaccines.
To the forecast, Lindsay, we're seeing 20s across the board. This is like sunblock weather now.
It really is. You know, those sun's rays are quite strong in the month of May, Nathan, but we also have some very warm temperatures to go along with it. Even warmer than we were yesterday, just about everyone in the 20s, with the exception of a couple of lakeside communities, once again, thanks to those breezes off of Lake Ontario. And speaking of which, those winds have been coming out of the south for the most part today. 23 degrees at Pearson International, 18 on the island. It is going to be mild through the overnight hours, too. There's a look at our current wind speeds. As for the satellite and radar, we've got clear skies, we've got sunshine, and we really don't have any rain in our short-range forecast. And it's starting to get to the point where we need some. We'll talk about if there's any in the long-range forecast coming up. For now, Michelle, I'll send it over to you.
Thanks, Lindsay. And still ahead, raising the flag to recognize the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, and Biphobia. We look at the progress being made and the important work that still needs to be done to eliminate discrimination.
The Toronto police officer facing disciplinary charges linked to the case involving convicted serial killer Bruce MacArthur was back before a police tribunal today. Sergeant Paul Gauthier has been charged with insubordination and neglect of duty relating to his handling of a complaint by a man in 2016. The complainant alleged serial killer Bruce MacArthur tried to strangle him. MacArthur was arrested at the time and released. He's now serving life in prison on 8 counts of first-degree murder. 5 days have been set aside for this hearing.
A warning. Details in this next story are disturbing. During an event today, the prime minister didn't stick around to take questions, so it was left up to his natural resources minister to respond following the resignation of the general in charge of Canada's vaccine distribution.
I will say that we remain committed to building a true culture of inclusion at the Canadian Armed Forces and at the Department of National Defence. So everybody is treated with dignity and respect. And we have to stay, and we do remain focused on the vaccine rollout.
Sources tell CTV News Danny Fortin is facing a sexual misconduct claim that dates back more than 30 years to when he was a student at the Royal Military College in Saint-Jean, Quebec. Military police reportedly received a formal complaint against Fortin in March. Sources say he allegedly exposed himself to a woman. On Friday, the Department of National Defense announced that Fortin would be stepping away pending the results of a military investigation. In a statement, Fortin's lawyer says he was not aware of the allegation until CTV News contacted him, and Fortin completely denies any wrongdoing. Conservative leader Erin O'Toole wants answers, saying, quote, Justin Trudeau must be transparent with Canadians who deserve confidence in our system, and that starts with providing information. Some experts are questioning why it's taking so long for the government to choose a replacement, considering the importance of the job. The Liberals suggest there will be no significant impact on the vaccine rollout, insisting armed forces members are continuing to play an important role. Like here, other provinces are doing everything they can to get shots into arms as soon as possible.
The delivery this week of millions more vaccines should help, and they're arriving earlier than expected. CTV's Jean-Via Beauchemin reports.
An unexpected delivery of extra doses is boosting Canada's vaccination effort. Instead of 2 million shots of Pfizer and Moderna this week, 4.5 million doses will land here before the long holiday weekend.
The faster we can vaccinate, the sooner COVID goes away. And it's really important to remember the outcome of interest, the success metric, is not vaccination. It's making COVID go away. Vaccination causes COVID to stop circulating.
And with much travel on hold, a Montreal Trudeau Airport parking lot is now part of Quebec's effort to get doses into arms fast. A drive-through site is now up and running.
You know, this was great. This was, easy, well-directed, well-organized. Not a lot of people.
Other provinces, including Manitoba, are starting to vaccinate those 12 and up.
As individuals, clearly, they're much, much, much less likely to have a severe outcome from this infection. But as a population, I mean, if you look at some of the new cases and the percentage of people who are positive, it's actually a pretty young cohort.
And the next question is just how quickly Canadians will get their second dose. Ottawa has already said it will likely come faster than the four-month interval initially set out. Geneviève Beauchemin, CTV News, Montreal.
It's unlikely Canada will get any, but for the first time, the United States is sharing vaccines authorized for domestic use.
This will be more vaccines than any country has actually shared to date, five times more than any other country.
U.S. President Joe Biden is sending at least 20 million vaccine doses abroad by the end of June. There'll be Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson shots. The U.S. already plans to give 60 million AstraZeneca doses to other countries. Canada has received 1.5 million on loan. Back in this province, it's the development many children and parents will be watching closely. Will summer camps get the green light this year?
The premier and others suggest the answer is yes. But for that to happen, there are plenty of details that need to be worked out. CTV's John Musselman reports.
For parents who send their kids to summer camp, a possible reopening is being celebrated.
I mean, thrilled. It's after the vaccine, this is the best news we've had since this terrible pandemic began.
Mark Schatzker has three kids who attend camps near Algonquin Park every summer. They were shut out last year. He says the experience is so vital to their development.
They learn skills you don't learn at school, how to swim, how to canoe, staring at the night sky, telling stories. These things are so important.
Premier Ford made a public pledge that camps will reopen this summer.
July 3rd is usually the time they open. They're opening up this year.
Ford didn't share any specific details, but he has reached out to groups including the Ontario Camps Association, giving them a cautious green light for overnight camps. Details on testing and public health protocols still need to be finalized.
And we talked about overnight camps and day camps. So our anticipation is that, and we know that our work with public health officials indicates that both overnight camps and day camps are going to be in a position to be able to operate.
It's essential. We've been seeing, you know, mental health just absolutely plummeting for these children. And to have this to look forward to, I think it's something for them to be excited about.
Health Minister Christine Elliott says they will follow the advice of medical experts.
We are anticipating that there may be other events, summer camps, golf, tennis, other things may be available as of June 2nd or perhaps before, depending on the clinical evidence that we receive.
Camp directors tell CTV News maintenance staff are already getting properties prepared, so sites would be ready to welcome campers this summer if the province gives the okay. John Musselman, CTV News.
To some developing news in North York, two workers pulled from a trench outside a home. One of them taken to hospital with serious injuries. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live at the scene near Don Mills and Shepherd with more. Scott.
Well, Michelle, the incident happened at the home behind me here across the street. You can see there's a small excavator there. That excavator was used to dig a trench that actually bisects the entire front lawn. That trench, deeper than 10 feet, it appears, in some places. Now, we're told that one of these men may have been working in the trench at the time of the collapse. The other man may have been standing on the side but fallen in. Both men needed to be rescued by Toronto Fire.
From the air, you can see first responders working feverishly to free a man trapped inside a trench on the front lawn of this North York home.
We noticed the guys next door working on an excavator. There's about two, three guys working on the front lawn.
Neighbors say the man had been working on the property since early this morning. At around 20 after 3, there was a collapse, trapping two of the workers.
They dig, yeah, and they put the land too close to the hole, and the land collapsed on them after, when they're in the hole to dig for the pipe of the plumbing.
The resident of the home was inside at the time of the collapse and said she didn't realize exactly what was happening.
Because we were behind, we could not tell exactly what happened, but later on we came to know that the two people were already inside the sewage.
Once firefighters managed to get the first man out, he was rushed to a local trauma center. A second man was removed from the trench a short time later and managed to walk with assistance to a waiting ambulance, which also took him to hospital.
Now, we're told that the first man that was pulled from the trench was taken to hospital in serious condition. The second man, as you saw, was conscious and talking as he walked to the ambulance. We do not have an update on his condition. We're also told that the Ministry of Labor has been called in to investigate this incident. Reporting live in North York, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Scott. Overseas, the American military is warning of a broader destabilization in the Middle East if the bloodshed continues.
Fighting between Israel and Palestinian militants is now in its second week with no end in sight. CTV's Paul Workman reports from Jerusalem.
The Israeli airstrikes cut a path of destruction across the Gaza Strip. A 10-minute missile barrage that was both deadly and hugely damaging to roads, power, and water supplies. The main coastal road was ripped open with craters and massive cracks that made driving hazardous, if not impossible. Their aim is to destroy the basic needs of the people, he says. There is no clean water now, no sewage system, no services. At least three Palestinians were killed in the airstrikes by an early count. A pinpoint attack on this car took out a top commander of Islamic Jihad. That's a big prize for the Israelis. Islamic Jihad returned fire, launching 60 short-range rockets. One of them struck a building in the city of Ashdod, causing minor injuries. As the U.S. Secretary of State urged both Hamas and Israel to protect civilians.
Palestinians and Israelis, like people everywhere, have the right to live in safety and security. This is not an Israeli privilege or a Palestinian privilege. It's a human right.
This morning's airstrikes touched off a serious fire in what was described as a sponge factory. There's now a shortage of fuel in Gaza, and electricity has been reduced to a few hours a day. They kept bombing and bombing, he says, hitting roads and houses. They should go after the militants, not poor people sleeping in their beds.
Throughout its intensive bombing campaign, Israel has blocked access to Gaza. Thousands of Palestinians have fled their homes, and there's growing fears now of a humanitarian crisis setting in. Paul Workman, CTV News, Jerusalem.
Around the world is a day to celebrate diversity while raising awareness about the continued challenges faced by many members of the LGBTQ2S+ community.
This is the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, and Biphobia. And here in the GTA, it's an occasion to promote inclusivity. CTV's Mike Walker reports.
Everybody should be able to belong.
Barry Bedford has experienced discrimination and prejudice his entire life and says it still continues daily.
But everything changes, you know, when they find out that our son has gay dads. And that's the sad part, where you're getting used to homophobia, where you just move on. I think you withdraw from a lot of people.
The hate, he says, has evolved to now being a target on social media, with responses like this whenever he supports a cause or shares a picture of his husband and their 14-year-old son.
I'll get comments from anonymous people online who feel free to spread hate that way. I block a lot of people on Twitter because there was a time I tried to engage them and actually educate, but then I just discovered that they're really not interested in education.
Today, businesses, communities, and governments taking a stand, marking the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, and Biphobia, with flag raisings like this one outside the Pickering Town Center. And the Transgender Pride flag flying outside the Peel District School Board, a day to acknowledge and reflect on the violence and discrimination experienced by members of those communities, but also a call to action.
There's still like systemic homophobia and transphobia within systems.
A very long way to go, whether it be in the workplace, whether it be in the education system, whether it be addressing issues of access to healthcare, housing.
Discrimination advocates say heightened by the pandemic. The executive director of EGAL Canada says more LGBTQ2S+ teens are reportedly experiencing an increase in cyberbullying.
52% of the 2S LGBTI community report that they've been the victims of online cyberbullying. And one in five of 2S LGBTI youth think that this is normal.
Advocates calling for more action from government, business, and public health leaders to implement policies to address the issues. Bedford believes education in schools has helped address the issues, but more must be done.
Through all businesses, there has to be anti-homophobia and anti-transphobia legislation passed.
Mike Walker, CTV News.
Still ahead, huge recognition for a Toronto Raptors super fan, Nav Bhatia, making basketball history with this latest offer.
An iPad 4, and coming up on Consumer Alert, it can be hard enough paying our bills on time, but imagine getting a water bill for more than $5,000. A snowbird who winters in Florida was shocked to get the massive amount, possibly due to a leaky toilet. I'll have what you should know. That's just ahead.
It's been a stellar week here in southern Ontario, and here are a few of our favorite viewer photos showing the nice conditions. Lake Ontario looking a little more like the tropics in Ken's photo from Brighton. That's beautiful. Terry has a real talent for capturing birds, and this mallard was spotted in the Humber Bay area of Toronto this morning. Joseph, meanwhile, captured a pretty lovely shot of the blue sky over Sugar Beach. Nice to have those umbrellas for a bit of shade, especially with the temperatures continuing to heat up this week. Our upper air pattern. Look at that ridge building. Toronto could be in for its first 30-degree day of the year this week. I'll show you which day that could happen coming up here on CTV News. We'll be right back.
If you're a snowbird who winters down south and you have a home here, it's a good idea to get someone to check it often while you're gone.
A Toronto woman says even though her home was checked, the person didn't notice a leak, which led to a water bill of more than $5,000. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, even a small leak can lead to a big bill if it's not noticed right away. In Toronto, water bills are sent out every 4 months. So if you have a leaky faucet or toilet, your bill could add up fast, which is why water fixtures should be checked carefully.
I was shocked.
Carol Burbridge has a home in Toronto, but spends her winters at her condo in Florida. When she's gone, she hires someone to inspect her home twice a week. That's why she was surprised when she got a water bill for almost $5,500.
They said, well, it was probably a running toilet. And I said, well, I don't know. I wasn't there.
Burbridge received the bill when she returned home last spring and has been in a dispute with the city about payment ever since. She says in Florida, if she had a water leak causing an extremely high bill, she would have been notified within days, not months.
In Florida, they call you right away and they tell you. and I received no phone calls. All they did was take the money out of my bank account.
The City of Toronto told CTV News of the 520,000 utility accounts it has, each year about 300 experience higher than normal water consumption. The Director of Revenue Services said, with a leaking toilet or faucet, water consumption can increase by as much as 24 times what is normal. The city said it can't discuss the specifics of Burbridge's bill due to privacy reasons, but said if customers meet the criteria contained within the bylaws, utility bills may be adjusted to reflect normal consumption levels. Burbridge says she will apply to have the bill reduced.
I don't mind paying for water that I use. I always pay my bills on time. And I don't like the fact that they withdrew that much money out of my bank account, too.
You're advised to keep an eye on your water meter and to check taps for leaks. At the City of Toronto website, you can log on to My Water Toronto to track your usage. There is also information on how to conduct a dye test on your toilet to check for leaks.
And using automatic payment plans to pay your utility bills each month can seem convenient. However, you still need to monitor your bills closely to make sure there isn't a problem, like a leak. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Well, hopefully many of you got outside over this past weekend, and now we have a new week with even more gorgeous weather. This heat, I kind of didn't expect it this early.
It's so nice. It's really a must to get outside. You can wear shorts, a t-shirt. Dress comfortable for this weather, Lindsay.
Well, I would say today was comfortable, that's for sure. And yes, if you can dress comfortable over the next couple of days, that's a good idea because it's only going to get warmer. Just want to point out the fact that at this hour, it is 30 degrees in the city of Winnipeg. It's 30 in Regina, Saskatchewan. It is 32 in Saskatoon. So yes, summer-like heat does happen midway through May. Weather is brought to you by Train for home comfort, cooling, and clean air. It is hard to stop a train. By the end of this week, Friday or Saturday, we too could be flirting with 30 here in Toronto and maybe even tying or exceeding record highs. Not the case today. We would have had to climb to almost 35 in order to break a temperature record. Instead, we were about 23 degrees, similar to yesterday and a couple of degrees above seasonal. Overnight tonight, we will be as well. 13 is the not so low we're forecasting. It's been a while since we've had an overnight low in the teens. And then tomorrow, we start to see that heat build, 26. And the main difference between today and tomorrow is the fact that by tomorrow afternoon, there will also be a hint of humidity. So starting to feel a little uncomfortable. I think for some, it's going to be the first day of the year that the air conditioning is turned on. And if you don't have air conditioning, hopefully you are able to find a way to stay cool, especially as we make our way toward the end of the week. We are currently sandwiched between two areas of low pressure, but we have high pressure in place that's keeping all of the active weather away from us. This is good news if you want to get outside and enjoy the sunshine. But I know that many people are now starting to work on their lawns and their gardens and looking for some rain. There isn't a whole lot of it, in fact, in the short range forecast. Here's a look into the day on Wednesday. All is clear. We will likely get a little bit of late day cloud, and then Thursday and Friday are cloudier days, generally speaking. But our next best chance of maybe a passing shower or thunder shower comes this weekend. Let's talk about your 7-day forecast. Maybe up around 30 degrees by Friday afternoon. Saturday looks hot as well. Again, potential for thunderstorm activity just with all that heat and instability in the atmosphere. If you're already ready for a break, looks like we'll return to seasonal for Victoria Day Monday. That's your look at the weather. Michelle, I'll send it over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. Also tonight, a Toronto cancer patient trying to secure access to AstraZeneca after learning he's allergic to an ingredient in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. The unusual situation without a clear solution so far.
A Toronto man living with cancer finds himself in a strange situation when it comes to getting a COVID-19 vaccine.
He's looking for a way to get AstraZeneca because of an allergy he has to an ingredient found in both Pfizer and Moderna. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has the story.
29-year-old Scarborough resident Mike Teixeira found out he has a severe allergy when he was a cancer patient being treated for leukemia. It was to a medical ingredient called PEG, also found in the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines.
And I also had a very bad reaction with this ingredient, which caused my throat to close up. So Those two vaccines are completely out of the question.
That's why Texera is seeking the AstraZeneca vaccine.
PEG is just an ingredient. It's found in some medications. It's found in some products. It's a cause of a very, very rare allergy.
When AstraZeneca was being offered, Mike was too young to meet the age requirements. But now that eligibility has opened up, it's no longer being offered as a first shot for Ontario residents. Now he's worried he'll have to leave the country to get his vaccination, something other Canadians have done under other circumstances.
We've basically looked everywhere we could, and everywhere we look, we get turned down.
They have Johnson & Johnson in the U.S., but no AstraZeneca in the U.S. It hasn't been approved yet.
Dr. Isaac Bogosh says AstraZeneca will likely still be offered in Ontario pharmacies for those who already got their first dose, and Johnson & Johnson is awaiting approval here. CTV News has contacted the health ministry about this unusual situation.
I'm currently trying to get my passport in order.
In the meantime, Texera says he's frustrated and worried people like him are falling through the cracks. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Starting today, some Shoppers Drug Marts in Ontario are offering rapid COVID-19 tests. It costs $40 and can provide results within 15 to 20 minutes. But the test can only be bought by customers who are not showing symptoms and who have not been in contact with someone who is positive. The pharmacy says a positive screening would require a follow-up test at a provincially run assessment center. Visit ctvnewstoronto.ca to see what Shoppers Drug Marts are offering the test.
A crucial part of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization will be led by two women. The team has promoted Dr. Haley Wickenheiser to Senior Director of Player Development. The six-time Olympian, who recently received her medical doctor's license, joined the Buds in 2018 as Assistant Director of Player Development. And fellow Hockey Hall of Famer Danielle Goyette has been hired. The two-time Olympic gold medalist will serve as Director of Player Development for the team. The Leafs start their playoff run against the Habs with Game 1 this week on Thursday.
The Toronto Raptors' long, difficult season is over, and today, head coach Nick Nurse reflected on how he's feeling right now.
It's weird when you're in these jobs and everything comes to such a screeching halt. You're in such a mode all the time to grab the next scouting report, and they load up the next film, and you're checking to see, you know, what's going on and when we're leaving and who's what's next and when the next bat, you know, all that stuff comes to such a screeching halt when it's moving at such a fast pace.
The Raptors finished 12th in the Eastern Conference, missing the playoffs for the first time since 2013. But Nurse will be busy during the offseason. He's head coach of Canada's men's national team.
Mickey Mouse will welcome back European guests a month from today. The company announced that Disneyland Paris will reopen its doors to visitors on June 17th. Other Disney venues in France are also reopening. They include Disneyland Park, Walt Disney Studios Park, and Disney Village. French bars, restaurants, and tourism sites are gradually resuming operations after being shut due to COVID-19 restrictions.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
He was just a sweetheart. I'm walking around carrying his little ball that ended up on our front lawn.
Updating our top stories, a four-year-old has died of his injuries after being hit by a car Sunday in his driveway in Vaughan. The child's 10-year-old sister is in critical condition. A 16-year-old faces a number of charges.
A lot of things can happen safely from an outdoor standpoint.
The province is signaling it may reopen some outdoor activities such as golf, tennis, and basketball. Health officials say a decision is coming on what would be needed. Today, the premier also pledged to open camps this summer, but there were no specifics.
And some breaking news from the Public Health Agency of Canada. We now know who replaces Danny Fortin as the head of Canada's COVID-19 vaccine distribution effort. Brigadier General Krista Brody assumes the role immediately. The Public Health Agency says Brody's played a pivotal role in the vaccine rollout as part of the initial deployment to the agency in November. She's been a member of the Canadian Armed Forces since 1989 and has been deployed to Croatia, Bosnia, and Afghanistan. People 18 and over are eagerly anticipating the chance to register for a dose.
They'll be able to get in line starting tomorrow. And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by co-anchors Nick Dixon and Jackie Crandles. Nick, you're going to be looking at some of the concerns about adjustments to the vaccine rollout with a panel of physicians.
Yeah, Michelle, of course, you know, for the last couple of weeks, 50% of Ontario's vaccine supply had been going to the so-called hotspot postal codes. That ends as of this week. And we've got a power panel of three doctors coming on to talk about that, plus the changes to 18+, what should be happening with the doses. And, of course, the concerns remain over AstraZeneca. There is so much confusion there. We'll try to sort that out.
Also, today is International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, and Biphobia. Jack, you'll be hearing from the organization that founded the day back in 2003.
Yeah, they'll be giving us a closer look at a new awareness campaign that looks at how these communities are victimized by violence. We're also going to look at some new research into bullying and how it affects LGBTQ teens. And we're going to be speaking with a student trustee at the Halton Catholic District School Board. She was behind a recently denied effort to have the pride flag flown at schools in that board. So an interesting discussion there to come.
An important discussion. Jackie, Nick, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
And CP24 tonight, it airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
Next to the effort to save dozens of trees in an Etobicoke neighborhood.
At risk of being chopped down with the arrival of new development in the area. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
And this is the type of tree that covered this entire area.
Valerie Gibson adores the trees in this pocket of Islington Village. She can't understand after 3 years of fighting why more than 40 of them should come down to make way for a townhouse development.
I went into total shock. Most of them are over 100 years old. The tall pines are 120 years old.
They're doing the driveway right here.
Down the street, Chris Grant is stumped too. On top of time, he says he's poured in money, around $90,000, hiring a lawyer and planner because the project pushes into his quiet residential neighborhood.
You know, kids play on this street, and the density, the height, and everything is just massive. It's too big to fit into a neighborhood scheme.
The townhouses consist of 82 units, featuring four buildings at three stories and two buildings at 3.5 stories. City staff had expressed concerns about an earlier, larger version of the project. Gibson and Grant say they thought having 140 area residents attend a community consultation meeting in 2019 would make a difference. But on May 11th, the Land Planning Appeals Tribunal said in its decision, the tribunal has been satisfied and finds the proposal and its assembly of 9 separate lots and the demolition required, as well as the use of the interior lot, to be appropriate. Grant worries some of the townhomes will have penthouses and roof decks towering over the single-family homes nearby. He and Gibbons are hoping for a more modest development, which will save some trees and be more in line with the neighborhood.
I'm horrified. I find it offensive the way we're being ignored. The taxpayers of Toronto are being ignored by these tribunals.
You can do a review panel of the decision, so we've asked for that. Where that goes, no idea.
CTV News reached out to District, the company developing the site, and its lawyer, but has yet to hear back. Meanwhile, the city says staff are reviewing the tribunal's decision and will determine the next steps it will take. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
Just ahead, making room for Nav Bhatia at the Basketball Hall of Fame. The Raptors' biggest cheerleader reacting to a whirlwind weekend and his groundbreaking induction.
To some, Nav Bhatia is just as recognizable as the players on the court.
The so-called Raptors superfan now immortalized among basketball's best. CTV's Saran Fanel explains.
Nav Bhatia is still floating after a weekend he'll never forget.
I'm speechless right now. As a fan, this is something you cannot even imagine.
He's not just any fan, he's known as the Toronto Raptors superfan.
24 seasons in the making!
Bhatia has become the first ever fan to be inducted in the Basketball Hall of Fame. It's an honor given to players, coaches, referees, and other major contributors.
I'm feeling good, but I'm still pinching myself if this is happening in reality.
The superfan joins a star-studded class of NBA legends being inducted, including the late Kobe Bryant.
I wish my husband was here to accept this incredible award.
His display in Springfield, Massachusetts features the first turban in the Hall of Fame, as well as a replica of his championship ring, custom superfan shoes, and his courtside seat.
Fans only dream of being so that their team can win the championship. And here I am, not just winning the championship, being the grand marshal of the biggest sports parade in the history of any sports.
Naturally, Bhatia was front and center of the Raptors NBA championship parade in 2019. He served as honorary parade marshal. Rain or shine, he's attended every home game since 1995 when the team first entered the league.
When the Raptors came to town, I bought 2 tickets. I could only afford 2 at the time.
He's the owner of 13 season tickets. 6 of those have been courtside.
Bembry on the attack. Here's Flynn.
The Raptors did not make the playoffs this season, but Bhatia's hoping he'll be back in his usual seat soon. Saran Fennell, CTV News.
All right, congrats to Nav. Lindsay, how's the forecast looking?
Things are looking good through the night tonight, Nathan. Clear skies and comfortable temperatures for that evening walk. We're going to take one more look at the 7-day forecast, heating up as we make our way toward the end of this week. And then there's your long weekend forecast. Michelle and Nathan, back to you.
Thanks, Lindsay. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us here at CTV News, have a good night.